ఓమసతో మా సత్వమయ తమసో మా జ్యోతిర్గమయ మృత్యోర్మా అమృతంగమయ ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. లార్డ్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ ది అన్రియల్ టు ది రియల్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ ఇగ్నోరెన్స్ టు ఇల్యూమినేషన్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ డెత్ టు ఇమ్మార్టాలిటీ. ఓం పీస్ 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 ఇంట్రో. సో డిస్క్రిమినేషన్, విచ్ మీన్స్ వాట్ ఈజ్ ది రైట్ టైప్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్ దట్ వీ టేక్ ఇన్ టు ది మైండ్, ఫ్రీడమ్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆల్ డిజైర్స్ ఎక్సెప్టింగ్ వన్ డిజైర్ విచ్ ఈజ్ టు రీచ్ గాడ్, కాన్స్టెంట్ unremitting practice, discharge of one's duties in a spirit of pleasing the Lord, acquisition of auspicious qualities like truthfulness, straightforwardness, etc., and not giving way to despondency or inordinate excitement. These are the requisite 7 qualities that Sri Ramanuja insists that every spiritual aspirant must cultivate. Then he is ready for the real spiritual practice. And this spiritual practice progresses through 3 stages: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. According to Ramanuja, Bhakti is the most important thing in life. So what is Karma Yoga? What is karma? Karma is action. We are all doing action. We are sitting, listening, thinking. It brings bondage. Every type of action leads one to bondage. Bondage means ignorance of one's real nature. It covers one's real nature. Unless karma is transformed into a yoga, in which case karma acts like poison which destroys the effects of karma and leads to the highest goal. Karma yoga is the technique of destroying the evil effects of karma or bondage so that we can become free. According to Ramanuja, karma yoga consists of 3 things: giving up the expectation of results, giving up attachment to the work, and finally feeling that I am not the agent, I am not the doer. So how this really works out in our day-to-day life, I'll give an illustration. Supposing there is a noise in this center, and we all come with the idea of progressing in spiritual life. Suppose this novice is given the duty of working in the garden, and he works very hard, produces lots of flowers and fruits, beautiful looking plants. So while he is doing the work in the garden, he should not expect that these results should belong to him only. They belong to the whole monastery because he is working as a novice. But expectation also, I am working so hard, will they give the results? Will there be beautiful flowers, abundance of fruits? If somebody by chance remarks, what type of gardener you are? He is all looking so ugly. You have probably not working properly, even though he is working properly. Sometimes adverse circumstances may retard the results. There may be too much of heat, too much of cold, or too many slugs, or too many devotees coming and plucking all the flowers. There is a belief among Hindus that one should not visit a temple without bringing something. And this man wants to be a devotee. He doesn't want to spend any money from his pocket. He comes up to the gate, nice looking flowers are there, he plucks some, enters and offers them to Sri Ramakrishna, and he thinks he is a good devotee.
so expecting the results and not appropriating the results. Both are involved in the detachment towards the results. Even this is very difficult. Then comes the second settler stage, giving up attachment to work. You know, we are all constituted of different temperaments. Some people like accounts, some people like gardening, some people like worship, some people like cooking. But if a person who likes a particular type of work is by chance or out of necessity is asked to do some other type of work which he doesn't like, he protests. I don't like this type of work. Funny things happen, you know. One of our Swamis, he never liked worship of Sri Ramakrishna. He said, give me any work, even cleaning the lavatories, I don't mind. But don't give me the work of worshipping Ramakrishna, it is so boring. But unfortunate for him, wherever he goes, he is given only that particular work. So finally he got disgusted. And he said, if you are going to give me this work, I am leaving the order. And the authorities considered and said, all right, you move over to the other center, there you will be given accounts work, which he liked. So he went to the new center with great joy. And the next day after he landed there, the head of the center called him and said, look, the person who is doing worship in the temple, he has fallen sick. Just for a few days, you please do this work. And when he recovers, then you can come back to accounts. So with reluctance, waiting, counting the days, he accepted the work. But unfortunately, the pujari did not recover. Doctor recommended a change for him, and this man was asked to continue. So Sri Ramakrishna has a peculiar ways of answering the prayers of his devotees. If somebody wants something, he will give just the opposite. Most of the time. So, attachment to work should not be there. After all, we are supposed to offer ourselves to Ramakrishna. We should not hold back. Having said that, the doubt might come, is it not that some people are not constitutionally, temperamentally fitted to certain types of works? What about them? Well, you see, the authorities who assign this type of duties, they are not blind. They also know, they also want to get the best out of everybody. Naturally, they would prefer to give work which is liked, which one is capable of doing. But sometimes, we are not having enough number of workers that need to fulfill the demands. So we have to make lot of adjustment. A devotee of God should not have any preference to any type of work. Joyfully he should take, because it is not his work, it is God's work. I'll give you a real incident from the life of one of our Swamis. He was a Swami who was a disciple of Swami Vivekananda himself. Very exacting type of person. He was in fact the assistant general secretary. And he had confronted one of the direct disciples, Swami Akhandananda. Swami Akhandananda was a direct disciple. He was doing great relief work in a village in Bengal. And he used to collect money, but he was not keeping the accounts. But as a registered public charity, we do need to keep the accounts. So the general secretary went on writing, Swami, please submit the accounts. And Swami Akhandananda got angry and said, what accounts? So much money has come and so much money is spent. That is your accounts. And this assistant general secretary wrote, that will not do. You have to give the details, who gave, how much, when, and how it is spent, for what items, what is the balance. This is all to be submitted to the government. So, but that Swami would not do, because their minds are not in this. They are not dishonest. They spent all the money for good purpose. Unfortunately or fortunately, that direct disciple became the president. And the first thing he did, I heard, was call the assistant general secretary and said, go and look after the cow shed. And what was the reaction of this Swami? Absolutely nothing. A cowshed and accounts in the office are equally Sri Ramakrishna's work. And with as much meticulous care as he was doing the accounts, he was also doing the looking after the cowshed. But of course, after some time, he was again recalled because his talents would be wasted there. That is how no attachment to any type of work should be there. If Sri Ramakrishna feels that yes, this child must do this type of work, that's fine, he will arrange for it. It's not for us to like or dislike. That liking and disliking should be given up. That is the main idea. Work is not important, what work we do is not important, but how we do it, that's important. So that is the very difficult thing, because we all develop likes and dislikes to everything, to clothes, to places, to persons, to food, to everything. And even when that is fulfilled, there is this ego, I am doing. Who is doing the real work? It is God who is doing it. This is the idea given in the Gita. There are two principles, Prakriti and Purusha, nature and soul, and it is nature which is doing everything. Our body, our mind consists of nature, and nature is doing its own work. In between you come and say, I am doing this work. That's why you also suffer. You also undergo endless birth and rebirth and death and all that. So these are the three types of attachments involved in the practice of Karma Yoga, which should be given up. Attachment to the fruits, attachment to the work, and finally feeling that I am not the agent, but it is God. We see in Sri Ramakrishna's life a perfect example of these three types of detachment. When a person, just for the pleasure of God, discharges whatever duties he is supposed to do, while developing the detachment from these three, to the fruits, to the work, and not feeling that he is the agent, but he is just an instrument in the hands of God, his heart becomes pure. This is the first stage in the spiritual progress. What is that? Atma Shuddhi, purification of the heart. When the heart is purified, then two things happen. What are those two things? First, the mind becomes filled with spiritual ideals only, because it acquires intuitively the knowledge that all these worldly things are not worth striving for. And the second thing that happens is, intuitively, automatically, the mind turns inward. How do we know that we are becoming pure? Our desires become pure, and our mind withdraws itself from the going outside, and it turns inward. Interior gaze happens. So this is the first stage according to Ramanuja, Atma Shuddhi, purification of the mind. Then he enters into the second stage, which is called Jnana Marga. Jnana means knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of one's own self, knowledge of what God is, and knowledge of what is one's relationship with God. Now this is where lot of differences in different schools of philosophy are manifest. According to every school of philosophy, we are the pure self. There is no controversy. According to every school of philosophy, God or Brahman is the supreme reality. There is no controversy. The controversy is, what is the relationship? Are you separate from God? Are you part of God? Or are you one with God? The non-dualists insist that we are one with God. All dualists insist that we are either separate from God, but part of God. This is where Ramanuja says, the relationship is, God is the supreme, He is our father, our mother, He is infinite. We are also infinite, but we don't become one. We are like Him. We become closer to Him, but we never become completely united, one with Him.
will ever remain separate from him. It doesn't matter what philosophy it is. But this knowledge flashes in a person in the form of knowledge. How does this knowledge come about? I will go through that process a little later. I am only describing now the three stages of spiritual progress. First thing is purification of the heart, which means the mind turns inward. It is filled with nobler thoughts. Second, it intuitively acquires knowledge about one's own self and about God and about what this relationship is. Swami Vivekananda, in one statement, defines religion as the eternal relationship between the eternal God and the eternal soul. So, a man gets a glimpse of his own self. This is called Atma Avalokana. Certainly, definitely knowing what one is in one's real nature. Atma Avalokana. Atma Shuddhi, Atma Avalokana. When a man gets this knowledge what one is and what God is, what one's relationship with God is, then he becomes a devotee, bhakta. He enters into the third stage, which is called bhakti yoga. And as he progresses in the path of devotion, he gets mukti or liberation. And this liberation consists again of four steps: salokya, samipya, sarupya, sayujya. He enters into the world of God. You know, somebody has just come from India. He is somewhere. He wants to come and see me. But he is in Scotland. He landed in Scotland. Salokya. He is in England. Same world, same country. Then he takes a train, and as the train is coming, he comes nearer and nearer to me. This is called samipya. As he comes to me, because he loves me, he sees me and says, Swami is dressing like that. It will be nice if I also dress like that. So he puts on exactly the same dress like me. He looks like me. Sarupya. Same form. Attains the same form. And when love develops, becomes more intense, then he becomes sayujya. He is always moving with me. All the time. But we never become one. We always remain separate. But he is so close to my heart. So these are the three steps. First karma yoga, then jnana yoga, path of knowledge, then path of devotion. When a person progresses in this way, he attains liberation. And this liberation is of, again I said, four stages. Enters into the same world as God, then slowly approaches nearer and nearer to him, then his whole body and mind takes the same form, and finally he becomes forever eternally united with God, though remaining separate. Now let us see how this works in our day-to-day life. If you are intensely devoted to, say, to Sri Ramakrishna, you are always thinking of him. You are always looking for devotees who are devoted to Sri Ramakrishna. You are reading books on Sri Ramakrishna. You are worshipping Sri Ramakrishna. You are doing japa of Ramakrishna. This is entering into the world. As your devotion to Sri Ramakrishna deepens, then you are approaching nearer and nearer to him. His qualities are manifest in you. You meditate upon him, upon his blessed qualities. So, whatever qualities he exhibited during his lifetime, you also are trying to manifest, isn't it? That is what is called devotion. Forgiveness, discrimination, dispassion, strong faith, not looking here and there, but only straight approaching God, etc. If the meditation becomes strong, the form also becomes the same. You know, you read incidents in the life of Holy Mother. Once she appeared like Ramakrishna. All the actions she was doing is like Ramakrishna, as though Ramakrishna possessed her. Swami Brahmananda looks exactly like Ramakrishna, especially from behind if you see. There are some photographs there. So we hear of Christian devotees. So they meditated so intensely upon Christ that even this stigmata and other things appeared in their body. Even their very forms also look like Jesus Christ's form. The form also appears.
finally they become merged in Him. There is no coming back for them. This is the process of liberation. So how does one progress in the spiritual life? According to Sri Vaishnava philosophy or tradition, there are certain things. The first thing is initiation. They must be initiated with what we call Astakshari Mantra. Om Namo Narayanaya. Consists of Om Namo Narayana, 8 letters. Then they have this, what you call, Namadharana. They put stamp on themselves, you know, like 3 marks here, and here, and here, and here. So that is very compulsory for everybody who is following the path of Ramanuja. Nowadays you don't see them very much, but if you go to South India, you see every priest and every Sri Vaishnava having this. By that you know he is a follower of Vishnu, and especially of Ramanuja. Then worshipping different gods and goddesses. According to the path of devotion, God manifests in 5 forms. According to Ramanuja, God manifests in 5 forms. The highest manifestation is called Para. Para means the supreme. The whole universe is nothing but manifestation of God. He is the universe, He is beyond the universe. This is indicated in the Purusha Sutta, that the whole universe is but 1/4 of Him, and 3/4 of Him is outside. He is both immanent and transcendent. This is the highest, and that is the goal which we have to reach. But it is not Brahman. Though Ramanuja uses the word Brahman, he doesn't mean what Advaitins mean by Brahman. He is a supreme person, Purushottama. Then the next manifestation is called Vyuha. Vyuha means this entire created universe is nothing but God. God only has become, is manifesting, is appearing as this universe. Then a lower than that is Vibhava, means special manifestation in the form of incarnations like Rama, Krishna, Jesus, Buddha, Chaitanya, Ramakrishna, etc. Then the 4th manifestation is Antaryami. He is indwelling in every heart as a special manifestation. Probably you don't hear too much about it. I tell you an incident. One day, Holy Mother was there at Jerambadi. One of the women there, there was a cat, and she was caressing it. The devotee was caressing it with her foot. And she started probably with the tail, and slowly she was progressing. She was putting her foot on, and finally she put it on the head. Immediately Holy Mother said, "No, my child, don't ever put your foot on the head of any creature, because Guru dwells there." Wonderful statement. Where does not Guru dwell? In the tail? Yes, of course. But what she means is in the heart of every creature, the Supreme Lord is specially manifest. So if by putting our foot on the head, we are disregarding the Supreme Lord, we are not honoring, we are dishonoring that creature. Have respect for every creature, because the Lord dwells in every creature. So, this is the 4th. And then the 5th manifest, I call Archavatara. Archa means worship. Archana. Avatara means in every image, in every icon, in every picture, in every photograph, I mean whichever is taken as an object of worship, there comes a special manifestation of God. This is a firm faith by all devotees of God. You know, the picture of Ramakrishna here. Do you think it's a picture? Sri Ramakrishna manifests. It is not mere symbol. It is not simply something to focus my mind upon. After some time I can throw it out and go. No. There is a special manifestation of God there. If we worship any picture, any image, any icon, or saligrama, a stone, or Shivalinga, with great devotion, somehow that comes to life. It is imbued with pure consciousness, special manifestation of consciousness. This is called Archavatara. So spiritual progress according to Ramanuja is from the lowest to the
highest. First, you see God in the images. When you have become a little more progress is made, then you start seeing Him in everybody's heart. Then you see that there is a difference between these people and people. There are some special people who are, as it were, embodied manifestations of God, like Jesus, Buddha, Ramakrishna, etc. And then a time comes when you see this whole universe as a manifestation of Supreme Lord. After that, you attain to the beyond this universe, that which is transcendental reality. This is how the spiritual progress is made according to the path of devotion, especially according to the teachings of Sri Ramanuja. So the third is worshipping gods and goddesses. The fourth is service to teachers and temples. A special emphasis is laid by Ramanuja that every devotee must render service to the temples. In South India, you see this is a special privilege. Some people, their service is preparing garlands. Some people, they make sandal paste. Some people cook the prasada to be offered to the Lord. Some people clean the temple. Some people bring just the water, because plenty of water is needed. Some people do the actual worship. Each part of this work, each work is considered as a seva, kainkarya. That is the right word used. Kainkarya, seva to the Lord. Service to temples, service to teachers is considered as very important according to Ramanuja. Then one must undertake pilgrimages. One should go to different holy places, because there a special manifestation of spirituality is there. It recharges our batteries, as it were. Then regular study of scriptures, especially of devotional scriptures. So these are some of the important special disciplines one has to do besides doing one's karma yoga, etc., if one wants to progress in spiritual life. Thus, karma yoga leads to jnana yoga. It produces knowledge of one's real nature and of God and of one's relationship with Him. And that in its turn leads one to the path of devotion. Through devotion, the individual attains liberation. This path of bhakti it requires lot of self-effort, lot of time, lot of perseverance, patience, hard work, takes lot of time. But all this effort will be useless unless it is aided by the grace of God. According to Ramanuja, without the grace of God, self-effort is absolutely useless. Nothing will be achieved. But how do we know that we are having grace of God? There is a lot of controversy in devotees' heart. How do I know whether I am having the grace of God or not? There is one sure indication. If the grace of God comes, it doesn't come in an explosion of light. It comes in the form of self-effort, intuitive understanding. The desire becomes strong. I must be devoted to God more and more. That desire becomes more. And when the desire becomes more, mind becomes restless. What can I do? Shall I do more japa? Shall I study scriptures? Shall I pray to Him? So that is the path of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga leads one ultimately to the grace of God. The grace of God leads one to liberation. That is common to all the paths of devotion. But Ramanuja has another special path. What about people who don't have that energy, that much of, they can't put forth so much effort, and they are impatient. They want God, but they don't have the energy. So what will they do? Well, he says there is a special path for you too. Nobody is excluded from this. Now, Sri Ramakrishna tells about dependent self-effort, two types of efforts, confirming Ramanuja's view. And he gives the illustration, the young one of a monkey and the young one of a cat. a small monkey, young one of the monkey, what does it do? It clings to the mother. It is self-effort on the part of the devotee. But sometimes the young one may also slip while jumping, you know, the young one may be left behind. The illustration, you know, the young one of a monkey and the young one of a cat. A small monkey, young one of the monkey, what does it do? It clings to the mother. It is self-effort on the part of the devotee. But sometimes the young one may also slip while jumping, you know, the young one may be left behind. There is a danger there. But there is another illustration he gives, the young one of a kitten. What does the kitten do? It simply cries, mew, and its mother comes, picks it up, and it will do whatever it wants to do. So the second path indicated by Ramanuja is called complete self-surrender. It is called Sharanagati or Prapatti. And Ramanuja gives great emphasis to this particular path. Ramanuja insists on this special practice. This spiritual practice is called Prapatti or Sharanagati, absolute self-surrender. What is self-surrender? Is it so easy to surrender oneself to God? It's not so easy. Self-surrender means you just go to Ramakrishna and say, I surrender myself to you, and go on doing whatever one likes. That's not self-surrender. Self-surrender also involves a lot of willpower. And Sri Ramanuja puts it this way, Anukulasya sankalpaha, a firm resolve to do only what pleases the Lord. Pratikulasya varjanam, to give up whatever displeases the Lord. Rakshishyati iti vishvasaha, unshakable faith that God alone can save me. Gotritvavaranam, to reject all other helps and to depend totally on God. Atmanikshepaha, placing one's burden on Him and Him alone. Karpanye, looking up to God for everything with great humility and longing. Iti Shadvidha Sharanagatihi. These are the six things which one must fulfill before one can say, I surrender myself to you. You know pranam? Devotees stretch the feet of the Swamis. And of course when we go to temples we make pranams. It's North Indian pranam and South Indian pranam. North Indian people are Vedantins. And they want to cheat a little bit God. I want to keep a bit of the world. And I want to keep you also. So they do just, you know, bow down like this. Half surrender and half self. But South Indian pranams, have you noticed it? Sastanga pranam. They just fall flat completely. Usually you see it in South India, very rarely in North India. But it's very strange. This custom also is slowly creeping among some of the Western devotees. One day I entered the shrine and saw one German devotee falling flat in front of Sri Ramakrishna. Because, you know, we feel helpless. We want to completely surrender ourselves to Him. Sastanga pranama. Eight limbs, all the eight limbs are completely offered there. So, all these six steps are involved before one can say that one has surrendered oneself to God. It's not merely saying something, but it is showing in our actions that I really want to surrender to you. In fact, nobody can surrender oneself to God unless God Himself accepts the responsibility. The devotees of Sri Ramakrishna can recall the incident of Girish Chandra Ghosh. Girish Chandra Ghosh had given his power of attorney to Sri Ramakrishna. He surrendered himself to Ramakrishna. Did he? He did not. He was asked to do it by Ramakrishna. Give me your power of attorney. Until God told him that give me your power of attorney, he could not give. So unless God says to us that I accept your responsibility, you can't simply give it to Him. But how do we know that he is accepting? He tells us that he accepts our responsibility. First, to show through these things. These are the six things. Doing only what pleases God. Never trying to do anything which displeases him. Unshakable faith that he alone can save. Nobody else can save. You know, two Irish people were going in a ship. And the ship was wrecked. And they were floating on a small plank. And they were certainly to be drowned. Then one of them became very repentant. He started praying to God, "Oh God, if you save me, then I promise you I will give up drinking and I will only think about you." He was telling this prayer and suddenly his companion knocked and he said, stop praying, I see a ship coming there. Don't be too hasty. Any kind of dependence upon anything else, God will not accept. We must complete, let's say in Christian literature, God is called a jealous God. He will not tolerate any dependence upon anybody else, anything else. Only he wants 100% mind to be given to him. This is what Sri Ramakrishna also is telling us. If you want to thread put the thread in the eye of the needle, even if one fiber is sticking out, it will not enter into it. Don't you recollect it? This is what he is telling. Complete mind should be given to God. So when these six things are practiced and thereafter live a great humility that it is God who is looking after me. It is his grace. I am nothing. That's what Sri Ramakrishna used to do. He used to give nice talks and people were so impressed they used to say, "Thank you very much." And Sri Ramakrishna said, "I know nothing. It is my mother knows everything. It is she who has talked. Give thanks to her." So, this is the special path advocated by Sri Ramanuja. When one reaches this stage, then he has nothing further to do. Whatever he happens to do is done by the will of God. And it becomes a joyful life of service, either through the path of devotion or the path of self-surrender, the soul attains liberation. And this liberation, as I said, progresses through four stages: Salokya, Samipya, Sarupya and Sayujya. So in this context, this idea of Ramanuja should be noted, that the ultimate sadhana or spiritual practice for man to reach the Godhead is to obtain the grace of God himself. Whatever human effort is put forward, even by way of highest devotion, is just a subsidiary factor required to invoke God's grace. Ramanuja's last word on spiritual practice is Sharanagati, complete self-surrender. This is what exactly Sri Ramakrishna had taught. This is what Swami Vivekananda has taught. Every day we sing, Tasmat Tvameva Sharanam Mama Dina Bandhu. Therefore, I take refuge in you, O friend of the lowly. We are singing every day. This is what Gita also says. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Giving up all other efforts, dependencies, take refuge in me alone. I shall give you the highest state. Ramanuja lived, it is said, for 120 years. And he knew his time has come for giving up this body. He went to the temple. I am reading out from the, this is a quotation from the life of Sri Ramanuja by Swami Ramakrishnananda. Most marvelous life. Have you ever read life of Ramanuja? It's worth reading again and again. Sri Ramanuja, after having lived on earth for a period of 120 years, out of which 60 years were spent in the holy island of Srirangam, one day approached Lord Ranganatha and sought permission of him to lay down the burden of the mortal body that was he was bearing even beyond the allotted full span of human life. The Lord was at first silent, but when Sri Ramanuja persisted in his request, he granted his wish. Ramanuja then went to his mutt and assembled all his disciples, announced his intention to depart from this world, and exhorted them not to deviate from the path leading to salvation. The disciples gave vent to their feelings of unbearable sorrow, but the teacher consoled them and commanded them to gather together after taking their night meal. When they did so, Sri Ramanuja gave them the quintessence of his teachings thus: worship Sri Vaishnavas, means devotees, exactly as you would do in the case of your spiritual preceptor. Have sincere faith in the teachings of the great teachers of yore. Never be slaves to your senses. Be not satisfied with the acquisition of worldly knowledge. Go on reading repeatedly the books dealing with the greatness of God and the wonders of His creation. If perchance you are favored with wisdom by Guru's grace, then the attraction of the senses will cease for you. Learn to treat all your feelings with indifference. Enjoy the utterance of the names and glories of God's devotees with as much relish as the utterance of God's name and glories. Note that. Enjoy not only the name of God, enjoy the names of devotees of God. Bear in mind that he who renders service to God's devotees attains God speedily. Therefore, unless you dedicate yourself to the service of God and his devotees, you will not be saved, however wise you may be. Do not consider the life of a Vaishnava or a devotee as a means for acquiring any selfish advantage. You must endeavor to realize the ideal, which is to realize God. Devote a portion of the day, at least 1 hour, to the contemplation of the greatness of your spiritual preceptor, and sometime every day to the reading of the sacred writings of the devotees, of the teachers. Always seek the company of those that pursue the path of self-surrender to God, and avoid the company of those that say, there are other paths leading to salvation. Is it fanaticism? Do not mix with anybody who are following the other paths. No. In the beginning, we need tremendous faith in our own path. Otherwise, the mind is scattered. Nowadays, I see people, they run to every teacher. What is the ultimate end? Every teacher is good. Every teacher teaches the same teaching. But that doesn't mean that you have to go on running whole life to every teacher. Hold on to one teacher, one path, and go on with your practice. Of course, occasionally for inspiration one can go. Nobody says no. But then importance is to begin, so the mind should not become too restless, always be going running here and there and visiting here and there. People think that by hook or crook, by miracle, somebody's grace, simply they will be elevated to moksha. Nothing. At the end we realize that we have to work very hard ourselves. Alas, would it be otherwise that if Ramakrishna comes and then just by touching he will give you liberation? Even he could not give liberation to people who served him with so much devotion for 15 years. Do you remember the case of Madhur Babu? 15 years he served Sri Ramakrishna. And when he died, Sri Ramakrishna told that his Madhur soul has gone to the world of Devi. Somebody asked him, does that mean that Madhur became liberated? Sri Ramakrishna said, affirmed, no. He has still desires to enjoy this world. He has to come back. So, do not mix with other people who advocate there are other paths of liberation. It is not fanaticism, but it is to protect ourselves from becoming too loose. It is called spiritual prostitution, if you want to use the word. Do not associate with people who are always in quest of filthy lucre and sense enjoyments, but mingle with the devotees of God to the extent possible. Whoever, here is a very important statement, whoever looks upon the sacred images of God as mere stones, whoever looks upon his own spiritual teacher as an ordinary human being, eminent devotees as low or high according to the caste of their birth,
the holy water that has touched the feet of God as an ordinary water and as mere water, the sacred mantras as a collection of mere sounds, and the Supreme Lord of all as an ordinary god or goddess. One who does consider in this way, he will be fit to dwell in the infernal regions. When Ramanuja finished this discourse, the disciples requested him to exhort them as to how they should live in the world after he departed. Thereupon, the Acharya commanded them to abide by the following instructions. He who has truly surrendered himself at the feet of God should not bestow any thought on his future, which is entirely at his disposal. For the least anxiety felt in that connection betrays the hypocrisy in his self-surrender. His present life is entirely determined by his past karmas, and so it is not proper to grieve over it. Let not the performance of your duties be regarded as a means for achieving worldly ends, but as a service rendered to the Supreme Being. Study the Sri Bhashya, which is a commentary by Ramanuja on Brahma Sutras, Sri Bhashya, and teach it to others. This is a service most pleasing to God. If this be not possible, study the holy writings of Saint Satakopa and other great souls and teach them to qualified disciples. Failing this, spend your lives in service done to the Lord in the sacred places on earth, or else construct a hut and live there in perfect peace. Or remain where you are and throwing all your burdens on God or your own Guru, and being ever immersed in the contemplation of the Dvaya Mantra, the special mantra, which means Narayana is the supreme mantra, Om Namo Narayana, and I surrender myself to it. It is called Dvaya Mantra, very important for Sri Vaishnavas. If none of the above be possible, seek a devotee who is full of wisdom, devotion and desirelessness, and move with him in such a way that he may be kind towards you. Uprooting all your egoism, abide by this devotee's words. This itself becomes a means for your salvation. In this life on earth, find out by careful discrimination your friends, enemies, and those who are indifferent. Sri Vaishnavas or devotees are your friends. Those who hate God are your enemies, and the worldly people are the indifferent ones. Let your heart rejoice at the sight of friends as though you have come across a great treasure. At the sight of your enemies, let your heart tremble as though you have faced a snake, a tiger, fire, and so forth. At the sight of the worldly people who are indifferent, do not mind them at all as though they are stalks and stones before you. Such should be the conduct of those who have taken refuge in God. Association with your friends, the Vaishnavas, will confer spiritual illumination on you. Shun the company of your enemies and the indifferent too. Do not talk to them, nor show respect to them in consideration of the worldly benefits thereby accruing to you, for such benefits are sure to make you soon an enemy of God. Remembering the all-merciful being, that he is ever ready to supply you all that you pray for, never beg of your enemies. That was the last message of Ramanuja to his devotees. This is what Sri Ramakrishna taught for all of us. I believe Sri Ramakrishna's teachings are closer to Sri Ramanuja than any other teacher. This is why Swami Vivekananda leans a great deal on Sri Ramanuja in his wonderful talks on Bhakti Yoga. We shall conclude this series of talks on spiritual progress in our next class by studying it in the light of Ramakrishna Vivekananda tradition. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.